saying how much they want a strong woman. What they really want is a cheerleader.
I'd like someone who's physically very frail and won't stop talking.
I just want what everybody wants. I just seem to have a harder time getting it.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Maximum Film. It's episode 323, representing the LA City. It's your boy, if you're Whitey Wayne, in the booth with me, all my friends. So let me introduce you to them. First up, we have the Christmas Zaddy himself, glowing in full power. But we cannot forget that he is also an amazing critic. Alonzo Duralde, what's good?
Oh, gosh, if you, I'll tell you, what was going to be good was the exciting news that I had upgraded my OS on my laptop without it all dying on me. But I can't open GarageBand, so maybe that was premature. Instead, I will say that as of this week, SiriusXM has launched all of their holiday channels. So, ooh, you know, yes, part of the Christmas Zaddy being in full flower right now is I'm listening to Christmas music. You don't have to if you don't want to, but I'm doing it. And you know, they just, they have a couple that are year rounders, but like now this is where they dig into, you got your hollies and your jollies and your jazz and your country and your, you know, all these different iterations of holiday music. So I just, you know, I love jumping around the dial and seeing what's out there and checking it all out. So if you're a SiriusXM person and you are a Christmas person, this is your week.
Woo! Yeah, it's this time. Everything's shifting. The lights are coming up. Mammoth is having first chair this weekend. If you're listening to this, I'm in Mammoth, coming down the slopes right now.
The pumpkin spice is giving way to the chocolate peppermint.
Oh yeah, and just like both, those are extremely my shit, and I'm lining up and getting it all the time. But speaking of things that are extremely my shit, Drea Clark is my shit. That is the queen of the Midwest, super festival programmer, producer. What's good?
I want you to know that you said first chair, and I just pictured you vying with the other clarinets for the band leader's heart and affection. And then I put you on skis because you took it to Mammoth right away. So, okay, what's good with me? I've had several of these lately, but I'm not about to stop. And that is a book recommendation. This was another book that came to me from one of the Gammas, my fake sorority that I started in college. I mean, we all started it together. I don't get like credit for that, for starting a fake sorority. But it's called Mad Honey, and it's, I loved it, and it's a novel that was co-written by two authors who have written a bunch of stuff themselves, Jody P. Cult and Jennifer Finney Boylan. And it's a really lovely story of a woman. Well, it's very lovely and very complex, but I also appreciated that for all of the serpentine narrative things that are going on with the story, it also has a really illuminating and thoughtful element of what the transgender journey can look like for a teenager in this day and age. And it also has like, you know, coming of age stuff, young love, old love.
Jenny Boylan. Okay.
Yeah. And then like a thriller sort of element, like a mystery to it. So Mad Honey. Yeah, I'll keep on bringing books. I will keep on bringing books. And clarinet references. That's what I do.
Know your role.
Yep.
Yeah, that's what you got to do, you know? Rep them books, rep what you know, and rep the SOAT, as we all know is short for Minnesota. But speaking of Minnesota.
Yeah, you did.
Oh, yes, I did it. It is a familiar voice, a friend of the show, filmmaker Casey Lee O'Brien. What is good, sir?
Hello! Oh, what a delight to be here. Well, what is good is I moved to Minneapolis a few months ago, so now I'm the queen of the Midwest. And one of the things I've really enjoyed about moving back here is its cuisine. You know, it's known for its fine dining here. And in Minnesota particularly, they have a whole frozen pizza scene here. Like, bars will individually, like, make their own types of frozen pizzas and sell them at grocery stores. So there's, like, dozens upon dozens of different types of frozen pizzas you can get at the grocery store. It's a huge section of the freezer section in the grocery store, and like the newspaper every year has like the best frozen pizzas in the state, and so I'm just really enjoying my frozen pizza options here in Minnesota.
Small batch,
right? That is the cultural specificity we are looking for.
Absolutely.
From a member of the team at large.
Yes.
I'd like to remind everyone who is wondering if Casey O'Brien's strongest energy that he's still putting out remains being the Joey McIntyre New Kids on the Block of Max Film, and it sure does. Got the hair, the boyish charm.
Drea. I used to get that all the time as a kid, that I looked like Joey McIntyre. So
because you do, also I tell it to you every time we
harsh,
talk.
Yes. The harsh winters have not diminished his powers. And, you know, when you talk about the food scene, I immediately go to legendary Minnesotan Mary Jo Peel talking about how her mother used butter as a spice.
I will say, I was out to dinner with my family recently, and my brother kept saying, "I think this ketchup is spicy." And not in a joking way. Like, he was like, "I think there's something wrong with it." And it was just normal ketchup.
It's statements like that that made everyone assume when you first brought up the cuisine of Minnesota that you were about to dog it. Jokes on them.
No.
Jokes on them. Yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah. They really had us all guessing.
Iffy, what's good with you?
Iffy, what's good with you? Nice job, Casey. Look at you.
Haven't lost a step.
Oh yeah, no, everyone's back in it. It's good. The gang's back together. But I kind of spoiled my what's good. We got it's snow season. We're back on the board. We're getting it in. It's great. But you know, also I got a new kitten. Tuna.
Oh my gosh!
It's a Bengal. Yes, and pure idiot. Asshole.
I love a dumb cat.
Because he, you know, my older cats are, you know, two ladies. So it's like boy energy who's just like, I'm a flop around. I'm doing all the goofy stuff and I'm laying down. But in honor of that, I wanted to read my daughter's letter because, you know, she does a spelling activity for school, and sometimes she can write a letter to the teacher. And this is by way of M giving Naomi a cat fact, and I guess she decided to share that cat fact with her teacher. So it's, "Dear Miss Dowdy, if you have a cat, don't feed it grapes or else your cat will die." So, you know, very, very, true to the point, but also feels like a threat. So
violets are blue.
Yeah.
It's the Wadi Wei Wei.
Yeah, it's a Wadi Wei Wei. You gotta let her know. You hope you like your cat. You better give me good grades.
Wait till she learns about dogs and chocolate.
Yeah, I know. It's gonna ruin her life. I cannot wait. But today we're going to be talking about some movies. We're trapped in Graceland with Priscilla, and we'll have a quiz about one-name movie titles. But first, it's time for Itadic, our movie news segment that is short for Is This Important? Do I Care? Where we read the week's movie news and answer that question. So, Drea, why don't you kick it off for us?
All right. Scarlett Johansson sues an AI app using her voice likeness in a marketing campaign. Lisa AI, an app that uses pictures to generate stylized avatars, is in hot water with Scarlett Johansson for replicating her voice and putting it into an ad for one of their apps. Actual audio of Johansson from a Black Widow behind-the-scenes video is used, as well as deep fake audio. The actor is not a spokesperson for the app and is now taking legal action against Lisa AI. Is this important? Do you care?
Yes.
Yes. Yep.
We are just scratching the surface of the nightmare of the deep fake. And, you know, at some point, I'm sure it's just going to be beyond anyone's control of reining it in. But I think for the time being, it's important to try and nip it in the bud as much as possible.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, like everyone's been saying, AI deepfake getting out of hand. I mean, it's kind of run rampant. Like, while we are actively kind of striking and going, you know, against this, live on TikTok, people are running wild with it. You know, I have friends that are voice actors that for Apex Legend, a game I worked on, where they took all the voice line and have them say whatever they want. And that's very weird for them to hear their own voices saying whatever they want. There was a thread on Twitter today, like this weekend, about an actress being like placed on the face of another, like,
Was that the elevator one?
Yeah, the elevator one. And it is getting worse quicker than ever, and I think that that the AI problem is going to end up solving itself when people are able to sue these companies to hell, and then it just becomes not lucrative or outright banned from usage, because it's just wild just how quickly it's gotten into the hands of everyone. You know, it's one thing for it to be something that exists, you know, in filmmaking, but to see how many just regular people are just kind of dicking around with it and just causing just problems.
Chaos.
Yeah, it's really interesting that Scarlett Johansson is doing this, because she was the voice in Her, like one of our most famous AI voices in cinema. And if anything, that movie kind of like portrayed AI as not a dangerous thing, but a source of comfort. And so it's very disturbing that this is being like turned around, especially with Scarlett Johansson involved. It's so upsetting. There was something with Tom Hanks recently too, where he was like used, his likeness was used in a dentist ad, and he was like, "This isn't me." So it's really upsetting.
Bold swings from these people on the upstarts. Like, I'm going to use the most famous female voice out there, and the most recognizable male actor. Like,
my worry, just beyond like celebrities and stuff, is when they start using it with politicians and start putting it on like 100%. Unfettered websites like Elon Musk's Twitter, and so people are going to be convinced that this person said that thing, and you know, good luck convincing them that no, that never actually happened, you know,
especially because everything in our society is geared towards people actively seeking out things that just confirm what they already think rather than looking for getting to the root of a truth. Yeah, great. Can't wait. What an awesome timeline we live in.
Yeah.
How fun.
I know. Everyone's just real hyped with all of that.
Well, speaking of technology gone amok, on Monday, Marvel unveiled something. It's called the Spotlight Banner, which are movies and TV series based on Marvel Comics IP, but which don't really connect into the MCU as we've come to know it. The first project will be the streaming series Echo, coming from, among others, the wonderful filmmaker Sydney Freeland. This news comes on the heels of last week's Variety cover, which read, "Is Marvel in trouble?" and speculated about a crisis within the brand. Is this important? Do you care?
I feel like this is an obvious course correct for them. You know, so much of the MCU was the first 20-some films really neatly integrating all of these characters and having these standalones, but having the world building adding up to something cohesive and bringing things in ensembles. And now it is so sprawling, and the amount of people who are watching the TV shows is nowhere near the amount of people watching the films. I get it, absolutely, on an organizational level. There's something daunting of, how many other things do I have to watch in preparation for something? I watch all of these anyway and still had that of, ugh.
Yeah.
But it is also a thing of, okay, can you still, though, lean into Echo? Echo's the first, it's a TV series of theirs that's led by, it's a character with a disability, it's a woman of color, like all of the people creating it. I'm like, can you make this sound more appealing and less of a, we're just going to do this other thing?
I'm hoping the sales point of this is you don't have to watch all the other stuff to watch it, and not, you don't have to watch this one and you'll still know what the larger picture is. Like, that's a legit concern, yes, but I hope they go with A instead of B.
Yeah, but, you know, that is such a great point. And you're all kind of like circling exactly what my worry here is that they're trying to put the genie back into the bottle and everyone just expects it all to connect. So even if you're like, there's this new banner that none of these are this, people are still going to be like, oh, it's a superhero thing. They all connect and I need to, you know, you're kind of like fighting against this, what is now just a public belief and less of a understanding. And I think the problem still is that there are too many of them. And this doesn't seem to solve that problem. It sounds like it's even more like, it's like, oh, not only are we also still doing the main line, all the films, but also, you know, there's these side things.
There's all those things in the main films. I'm so sorry, but like the end of the Eternals was, oh, hey, there's this gigantic giant that's springing out of the earth. And there's this faraway shot over the ocean with like a hand and a head. Girls, we have had numerous films since then. I'm like, no one on earth is commenting about the enormous stone head and hand coming.
Yeah.
No,
we're just, it's so here.
Okay.
It's so deep. And really, like, you know, just a quick, you know, Marvel tidbit is the issue of the overproduction of these films is because of the initial problem we've all been complaining about, which is making it a sales call, because you wanted to hop on the phone with the shareholders and say every month there's going to be a Marvel movie on the screen and it's going to make you billions of dollars because these are making so much money. And that system isn't working because there was also a global pandemic and there was also just waning interest.
And it turns out that digital effects artists need time to make things look like not garbage.
Yes, and they're starting to get unionized. It's like, what we need to hear is just a pullback where it's like, hey, let's go back to our roots and create movies that need to be made. Yeah. Because I can't imagine any artist ever being like, I want to make as many as of this thing as quick as possible just to get it. It's, you know, that almost every filmmaker is like, I'd like to take time and make a good thing, please. So let's get back to that.
Oh, it sort of feels like, you know, Marvel, it sort of feels like a band, you know, like a band has like kind of a run of their good albums that are like, and then they sort of like get to a certain point where you're like, this one's good, yeah, but it's just they don't capture that magic that they once had. And so for me I just have stopped watching all Marvel things altogether just because it's just petered out for me. And I'm definitely like a fair weather fan of watching Marvel, so I can't help but this feels like a call for help. I don't know.
Well, I think whoever used the term course correction, I think that's what we're going for here. If you are remotely interested in anything that's going on in Marvel World, read that Variety piece. It is pretty, they really cover their bases and dig deep into the various things that are going on over there. And, you know, can this Marvel be saved? We'll see.
We shall see. Speaking of seeing things, Robert Pattinson's surprising voice acting debut in Miyazaki's new The Boy and the Heron means you won't be able to see him. We've told you before about Studio Ghibli's latest film, The Boy and the Heron, which was released in Japan earlier this year. The film will have a December release date in the U.S., and some big names have joined the voice cast for the English language dub. I just want to also point out this is par for the course for Miyazaki. He is always getting banger names. You had Christian Bale. I've once looked up a list of like celebrity voices that have done Miyazaki movies.
Lauren Bacall and Howl's Moving Castle. Because, you know, there was that whole period of Disney having the U.S. rights to stuff, and they really like put a lot of effort into generating great voice casts. And then since then, people here know who Miyazaki is and care. And, you know, like they that's a gig you want to get.
When the trailer came out last week, the internet had a particularly big reaction to Robert Pattinson's performance as the Blue Heron, his first ever as a voice actor. Mostly folks are surprised that he actually decided to, well, voice act. So why don't we play some of this clip?
Hey.
What exactly are you?
Dear mother, she's awaiting your rescue. I'll be your guide.
Is this important? Do you care?
I feel like we are so, like, on the record for years that Robert Pattinson is such a good actor. And I like to think that him doing that growly Blue Heron was how he wore his voice out to become the Batman. But B, I've never not been impressed by him. And one of my favorite roles, other than, like, if you look at, he did back-to-back The Lost City of Z, which is a Snorville, you're fine without it, but he's good and eccentric and weird in it. And then did Good Time with the Safdies right after that. Like, if you ever doubt the skills this kid has. So that all said, I watched that trailer a few times before I figured out which voice he was doing when this story first came out. And I don't know if there's any, I mean, isn't that like the most impressive thing you could say to an actor?
Oh, yeah.
For sure.
Especially a voice actor.
Iffy, I know you're famously subs, not dubs. So are you even going to listen to this, his portrayal of the Blue Heron?
Cutting, I don't think I'm famously you. Subs, not dubs.
Famously. But, it's in your Wikipedia, I'm sure.
Yeah, all over the internet.
But yeah, no, I'll probably watch whatever format is available when I get to the film. Because that's the thing with anime movies is they'll just toss it up there, you know, up and it'll be like sub or dub. And with me, I'm like, what is available for the time I want to see it? Because that's what matters. You know, trying to get fit into the laser, AMC laser, see what's going on.
If I have the time, when I do a Ghibli movie, I like to go dub for the first viewing. Ooh. So I get the full visual experience.
Sure.
Then I go back and do subs. But you know what? They're all dubs because it's animation.
Ooh, twist.
Got him. Yeah. Yes. Oh, yeah, that's about, you know, I think that's how the cookie crumbles. So on that note, we're going to take a break, but when we come back, we're discussing Priscilla.
A Queer History of Aerospace is a new audio miniseries now available from the Museum of Flight.
Located in Seattle, Washington, the Museum of Flight is the largest private nonprofit air and space museum in the world. A Queer History of Aerospace explores the ways that the LGBTQ+ community has shaped aviation and space exploration, and the ways the industry has impacted the LGBTQ+ community. Ultimate goal is to encourage people who have been left off the museum walls to share their own history so that together we can start telling the whole story.
You, yes, you can listen at museumofflight.org/podcast or search The Flight Deck on your favorite podcatcher. New episode every Tuesday.
Welcome back to Maximum Film. I'm your host, Iffy Wadiwe. In the studio with me are...
Drea Clark.
Casey O'Brien.
Alonzo Duraldi.
Today's movie comes from director Sofia Coppola and premiered at the Venice Film Festival. It is loosely adapted from Priscilla Presley's 1985 memoir, Elvis and Me. Drea, would you mind giving us a brief synopsis of Priscilla?
I will, with a fun extra fact that another thing inspired by Elvis and Me was Depeche Mode's Personal Jesus. So keep that in the back of your head while you listen to the rest of this conversation. Yeah. So Priscilla, based on the real life humans involved, starts with a 14-year-old young Priscilla on an army base in Germany, where she meets a 24-year-old Elvis Presley, who's already an international star of stage and screen, mostly stage, and he is serving in the army, very famously. They establish a connection of sorts, and their relationship continues as he gains guardianship of her and she comes to live with him and goes to high school while he continues being a megastar, and their relationship continues to flourish and their life build together, and they're married, they have a child, he goes through all of the things that he goes through as Elvis, and the end. Priscilla.
Yeah. Yay.
And I'll say, too, the other nod, I was saying this before we started, obviously what we want when we're talking about this movie of a young woman is just a rich assortment of female voices. So we have Casey.
Yes.
But that joke aside, honestly, I don't know anyone who has more of a child bride vibe to them than Casey. So I really do think it's fitting.
Thank you, Dre.
You bet. Yeah.
You know, just to kind of touch on what you mentioned in the synopsis, it is like interesting watching this movie kind of even before things get, you know, bleak and dark continue to remind us, like, she young. She's so young. He should be dating someone her his own age. Like, it really feels like Sophia is, like, sitting behind me in the theater, like, just so you know, don't let this, my good, you know, shots and directing fool you. There's none of this should be happening.
Well, that's the thing. Like, you know, these are real people and true and real events. And it's like, this is a Sofia Coppola movie. Like, this yes. was always a Sofia Coppola movie. And now it's literally a Sofia Coppola movie because it is a movie about a young woman ensconced in a place. And that place
wealth.
Might seem luxurious and, you know, aspirational to people on the outside, but inside it is a prison. It is a prison of, you know, pleasures and of pillows and, you know, macaron and sneakers if you're Marie Antoinette or whatever. But like, she is the classic Sofia Coppola heroine, going all the way back, mind you, before The Virgin Suicides. Her first major credit was co-writing Francis Coppola's segment of the anthology film New York Stories, a short film called Life Without Zoe, which is a very like Eloise-esque story about a girl who lives in the Plaza Hotel. So as long as Sofia Coppola has been putting pen to paper, this is the story that she has to keep telling. And she finds so many different ways to do it. And I just find that fascinating that she is just like, she picked a lane early. She's staying in that lane, but every off-ramp is going to be different and unique and its own thing. But the lane is the lane.
Just to piggyback off that, Alonzo, I think you're 100% right about all of her movies, but also so many of her movies are about like a bored woman who is very close or adjacent to fame. Like fame is like sitting right over there, but she's a part of it, but just on the outside and has no kind of control over it. It's just kind of like existing there. So it puts her in even more of a like in between place where like nothing is happening. And yeah, you're so right. It's like all of her movies. There's a bored woman and I love it. I would come back but every time for it.
I'll say with that, I appreciate that she knows that's her lane. Sofia yes. Coppola is not like, you know what? Let me take everything I'm interested in and explore this lower middle class woman of color. Like, I think there'd be something disingenuous there. Like, girl, you're a Coppola. Like, let's not kid ourselves. Yeah. You understand affluent white women. And so, I'm sorry, I didn't pronounce that right, Iffy. White women.
Yes,
and
thank
so,
you.
And there he does. But that said, as someone who was born and raised a middle class white woman, Sofia Coppola imbues the women, the young women or girls going through her stories. She values them.
Yes.
She gives importance to how they go through the world. And not many people do. Not the people in their real lives, not cinematically. And there's always been something to me so warm. I'm definitely wasn't rich, nowhere near fame, even though my dad's name is Dick Clark. But the idea of what she looks at and how she sees the full facet of what these girls are going through and feeling and is like, those count. How you go through the world counts. And therefore, people watching could hopefully, even if you don't identify at all with the girls at the center of her stories, that idea of like, oh no, everyone's, you know, path through this world has importance to it and their story should be given credit for that.
Yeah, that anyone could be a protagonist, and that very often the characters that she's focusing on are ones that in other movies would just be on the side somewhere, but she's putting them front and center, and their concerns and their hopes and their fears and all of that stuff, and yeah, it's almost revolutionary, her determination to like center those narratives.
Yeah.
Did you guys have a funny comparison, Casey? We recently talked about Anatomy of a Fall. A very different motion picture. However, because we were just talking like the Elvis of it and just the, oh God, this really, there's no getting around. Like she was a child, like they meet and she tells him she's like in eighth grade or seventh grade or something, or ninth grade, whatever, child. And he's like, oh, well, that's great. But I did give Sofia Coppola credit of, I look at this and I still felt I understood the choices Priscilla was making beyond just him being beautiful and famous. And Elvis had such a stunted adolescence himself. Like, he has surrounded himself with a pack of guys like you do in ninth grade. Their favorite thing, like, they were, there's a bunch of guys and they roughhouse. And
I wish I was still acting, because I would have been so good as one of his side doofuses.
Casey, you really were.
Rushed. Oh my God.
Casey. Yeah.
Elvis, born, let's go. I would have been great.
Born to toss
Entourage.
Toss a pigskin around in a yes. bumper car. Oh, yeah. But the idea of, I bring up Anatomy of a Fall, that those complications, like, you could look at either of these immediately and be like, oh, there's a single black and white element of this relationship. And while there certainly is with the power dynamic of their age, the complexities of, she's not trying to just say Elvis is all bad. Like,
yeah,
you're getting yeah. all of those ideas of, oh, he also is dealing with control issues. And so, of course, he is then trying to control someone else in his life, because he answers to his parents. You've heard about his mother. He talks on the phone with the colonel. Like, there's a complexity to it that I appreciated.
And yeah. a toxicity to fame in general that just warps everybody's perception and what their lives are like.
Yeah.
She can't sit in the front yard and play with their dog because there are tourists. And he can't leave the house either, which is why he's got the entourage around him all the time.
Yeah.
Because he can't just go out of a bar somewhere and be social. So they are, he is in his own way trapped in this prison, and he has power over her, but he is also an inmate, you know?
One of my favorite scenes, and I guess my light spoiler, this is real life, I don't know, where Elvis,
we've all heard personal Jesus, so everybody knows how this goes.
Yes. Yeah. Well, she's like, it's one of the many times where he, like, basically kind of tries to break up with her, and he's like, oh baby, we gotta spend some time apart, and she's like, okay, tell me when to leave and I'll leave. And then she, like, walks out in the hall and he's like, oh baby, come back. And it, like, totally reverses the power dynamic just by, like, not fighting it. I thought that was it's like a very short scene, but it's kind of a turning point in the movie for me, because it's where she starts reclaiming her own life in the movie. And I thought that was really good.
Yeah. That's a direct line from the book too, that her saying that.
Oh yeah, that's amazing.
He thinks he's a black belt, but she's jujitsuing him.
That's yeah, right. it was such a great moment, because, you know, you just see that moment. And there was just also the performance in that moment, which, you know, I'll start to dive into after this, is so perfect, because there's, like, a doneness to it where yeah. like, where it's like, oh, you know, even though I know when it all ends, I was like, oh, is this where she ends things? But yeah, no, to stick to what I was saying, the performances are just really solid from everyone in here. And it's Kaylee Spaney.
Yes. And Jacob Elordi are both yeah. extraordinary.
You know, Austin, I'm sorry, but I think Jacob might have cooked you on the Elvis performance here.
The thing I appreciated, though, about this movie, as compared to, I did like the Baz Luhrmann. I mean, it's a yeah. flawed
so,
film.
I did, too.
But sure. I thought Austin Butler was very good as Elvis in that movie. But what I appreciated that Sofia Coppola did in this, I feel like there is such an importance placed now on people looking exactly like the people they're portraying, the real life people they're portraying, and like, oh my God, he got the impression exactly right. He's an amazing actor. And I find that kind of boring, and it's become such a big thing with the Academy Awards in recent years, where it's like, oh, mm-hmm. they sounded exactly like them. They're the best actor. And I feel like I like how Sofia Coppola, they're not exact one-to-ones. I mean, Jacob Elordi, I think he does a great job, but he's not really, he's doing an Elvis impersonation, but it's not a total, like,
mimic.
One-to-one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He's not going to marry you in a drive-thru. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And she, Kaylee Spaney, I thought was fantastic, but she doesn't really look like Priscilla Presley, and she's not really, I thought I'm glad they did a departure from, like, the real life people.
I agree, because I think that the elements that come across for both of them serve this world, and that's why I think, like, Jacob Elordi is the perfect Elvis for this, whereas Austin Butler is the perfect Elvis for yeah, Baz Luhrmann.
Absolutely.
Like, totally
yeah.
different cinematic oh, yeah. languages going on. And Kaylee Spaney, the end of it, like, for me, that she's there not because I look at her and I'm like, oh, she perfectly evokes Priscilla yeah. as I knew her. It's, oh my gosh, this girl, I am watching this film and the majority of her performance is her reacting often silently to something. Yeah. And she is bringing so much to the table when it comes to that level of performance. You are just looking at this young woman's face and everything that's going on of like her desires, her what's being repressed, what's being put out there, like all of it. It's right there. It's beautiful thing to watch.
She has so many wordless scenes and is always just giving you so much.
Yes.
with a look, with her eyes, with the way that she holds her body or her face. I mean, like it's terrific. And I think there's a case to be made here that if you're gonna do a biopic about sort of legendary people, cast talented lesser known actors, you know.
Yes.
Because so you're not watching star A morph into star B, maybe, or not they will, but if you don't have an investment in, I don't know who Kaylee Spaney is before this movie. If I've seen her and stuff, I wasn't aware of it. And but within 30 seconds I'm like, you are Priscilla Presley. You know, and you are Priscilla Beaulieu as a 14-year-old girl, and at the end of the movie, you are Priscilla Presley as a 29-year-old woman, and I am buying all of it, and I'm not lost in the weeds of, oh wow, I'm sort of seeing it's this actress, but no, I'm really getting the character. Like, no, I'm coming in with a tabula rasa for this woman, and I'm leaving the theater going like, she's a star.
Oh yeah, 110%. But also, really the scenes when she was younger and these like shot reverse shots where you see just the age difference displayed. And even like, I think the dynamic was displayed too, where, you know, you see in her eyes, she's just kind of like, oh, this is Elvis. And you see his eyes where he's like, I got you. And I think that kind of like subtle storytelling on top of everything just really made the story kind of stick together like glue.
I'll add, we aren't getting a whole lot from this that we don't already know, right?
Yeah.
Like, if you know the shades of it, so much is dependent on these performances. And I remember I watched it and walked away, and my first thought was, it's beautiful. It's, of course, it's like exquisitely made. The world building is incredible. The tone, the atmosphere, all of it is specific and unique and distinctive. And I love that. But I felt a little flat, like, oh, am I dissatisfied? And then it slowly dawned over me by the next day. Like, I kept thinking about it and was like, oh, I feel disaffected. Not because this film has let me down, but because the film has done exactly what it's trying to do to convey what Priscilla has gone through. Because the whole shape of what we're seeing by this young girl who is in a relationship young and it takes on increasingly controlling elements is, oh, you don't get to develop your own identity. Like, she's literally not allowed to have friends. She can't have a job. She can't have hobbies. She has a puppy. Like, end of list.
He totally vertigoes her, like, hair and wardrobe choices.
He totally vertigoes her. Yes. And to me, what that is, that sort of like, oh, that's the part of filmmaking that's hard to explain. Like, oh, did the story give me everything? No, the whole essence of it gave me everything. Like, I left that feeling the same way of, man, if I was in my early 20s and had a child with Elvis and a failed marriage, like all of these things, like, how would I feel as a human? And that's how I felt by the end of this movie, which is such a different thing that Sofia Coppola is trying to take on than another film that may be a biopic of, oh, here, I just want to give you the bullet points of what this life, you know, here's all of the things that happened to this person.
Yeah.
Yeah. I appreciated so much how, you know, Sofia Coppola is like a very, when I was like comparing this with Baz Luhrmann's Elvis, I was like, how is Sofia Coppola going to like tackle this world? But this world is so small in the movie. It's like, so like, it really focuses in on like the little like knickknacks that are in the houses and like the little objects that are in there, and it really
the Chanel number
really...
5 bottle has a comeback.
Yes, and it just feels so small and tiny in a good way that is an interesting thing an interesting movie to make about Elvis, you know, making it small. And it's just, I just thought that was really
50% of this movie takes place in a bedroom and there's no hot things happening.
Yes.
And the idea, like, Priscilla's always maintained that they never slept together before they were married. And it's always been like, okay. I mean, I know why you'd say that, but I watched this and was like, okay, even if part of this is true,
now yeah, I believe
that sort
it.
Of that yeah. sort of tracks, like the controlling element of it, the like, oh, I would like a beautiful virginal vessel that I can kind of dictate and push, like, amazing. But yeah, Casey, that's exactly it. Like, the whole we're getting Priscilla's worldview for, like, we get so much Elvis in this, but it's all smartly and handily centered around Priscilla's POV, and because of that, we never freaking leave Graceland. Mm-hmm.
And the yes. thing is, like, even like in the Lorman Elvis, like, his world is kind of small because since yeah. the colonel can't leave the country, Elvis never does either. Elvis, like, after Elvis comes home from the army, he never leaves the United States again, and he was a global megastar. So, like,
yeah.
the idea that Elvis never got to play like Budokan is crazy, but the colonel couldn't go, so, you know, Hawaii would have to do.
Did you guys all picture Tom Hanks when there's like one time yes. where you see Elvis on the phone with the colonel? Yeah. Were you just picturing Tom Hanks?
I was like, it would have been so great if there was just like a shot of like Tom Hanks as the colonel, like getting on the bus or something. Oh God. Yes, that would have been wonderful. That's what I imagined.
The Elvis cinematic universe.
Yes.
I hear the deepfake technology is ready.
look, we got to get it done. You know, get that big... Big Tom in
there. We can send Tom Hanks to the dentist. We can make him the colonel again.
Yes. We can make him the colonel again.
All right, should we vote?
I was going to say, it's time for us to vote. Yeah. Vote. Casey, so you understand how we vote things on this podcast.
Tell him. I'm confused.
So, I'm going to take it slow for you so he can get it. Screen It is the highest. That's the highest one we use. Stream It is the next level. And Skip It is self-explanatory. Who wants to start so Casey can see how it goes?
Oh, I will. Yeah, absolutely. This is a Screen It. You know, the performances are extraordinary. Philippe Lesourd working again with Sofia Coppola really, again, yeah, captures this world in its sort of like the glamour and the tackiness and the tininess of it in a way that's just always fascinating to watch. And talk about like the small circles of things. This is a movie that Sofia Coppola made about her cousin's ex-mother-in-law.
Very strange.
Mm. Man, get out of here.
Wow. Yeah.
Get out of here. Small town LA right there. I am also a Screen It. This one really stayed with me. I was immersed in it. It moves along. Like, you are taking it. You're just there the whole time of like, oh, is this more like what it was really like? And then, like I said, that idea of walking away with, oh man, film is there to convey the human experience as is different for everyone and how wonderful that is, even when it's terrible. Like, also, I saw this with my friend Hannah and we walked away and her first words were, yeah, he was a real loser. Gotta love that. Gotta love that. Enjoy your legacy, my guy.
Yeah, truly. Yeah, you know, and big Elvis heads were mad about it, but I mean, you know, you gotta accept all
there's complexity there, but yeah, you don't look great.
Yeah, you know, you really don't. You really don't.
I'm a Screen It as well. I thought this was just fabulous. I think this is one of Sofia Coppola's best movies. I not that she hasn't made a good movie in a while, but I just felt like this felt like a return to form or something. I just really loved it. It has totally opened up for me since watching it, kind of like you were talking about, Drea. And I found it like very moving, and I can't stop thinking about it. That was great. Screen
it. That's where you want to be. That's where you want to be. You want to be thinking about it nonstop. Yeah, I'm Screen It as well. Everyone kind of knocked it out the park with the reasons. Beautiful story. It looks great. All the performances are out of this world. And yeah, it is like oddly kind of like a like I was thinking a lot about Baz Luhrmann's Elvis when watching this, and I was like, oh yeah, it's almost like you get the other, especially since this takes, like you said, takes so much time in the room. There's like the super cut where you cut to the big vrooming scenes and then you cut back into the room and Priscilla's chilling, hoping he's, you know, keeping it together.
That's a great point, Iffy. I was just going to say Sofia Coppola was asked about that, about like, are you bothered that Baz Luhrmann had a movie about Elvis earlier this year, last year? And she was like, no, it's great. It brings Elvis into the cultural consciousness again, because I feel like weirdly Elvis is sort of like not relevant today in the way that like the Beatles are, but there's been two movies about him. I don't know. He's like an interesting person in history. And I think Sofia Coppola tackled it very sensitively, even the matters of like the age difference. It wasn't explicitly like he's a predator, but she visually was able to show that, just like, if you kind of just touched upon that, like how they looked at each other or like her size even. So, very interesting.
Yeah.
Speaking of size, I do want to warn everyone, there's no way to watch this and not wish your hair was bigger.
It almost
maybe
felt...
Casey and Alonzo.
No, please. The wigs are on point.
At some point, it felt like the movie was kind of being like, it's going to be bigger every scene. Like you're going to like it felt like a sketch at times where I was like, it's bigger, right? It's bigger. It's way bigger.
I wanted to hear what John Waters thought about this movie.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, everyone except Casey. I haven't got to see the exhibit yet, but everyone talks very highly of it. There's a John Wilder's exhibit, Casey. Yeah. You can't see it because you're far away. Yeah. But everyone
enjoy
in here,
looking at the frozen food section instead.
Fuck you, Drea.
All right, we'll be right back after we hear from another show from Maximum Fun.
What is up, people of the world? Do you have an argument that you keep having with your friends and you just can't seem to settle it? And you're sitting there arguing about whether it's Star Trek or Star Wars, or you can't decide what is the best nut, or can't agree on what is the best cheese.
Stop doing that. Listen to We Got This with Mark and Hal, only on Max Fun.
Your topics asked and answered objectively, definitively, for all time.
So don't worry, everybody. We got this.
We got this.
Hey, Sydney, you're a physician and the co-host of Sawbones, a marital tour of misguided medicine, right?
That's true, Justin.
Is it true that our medical history podcast is just as good as a visit to your primary care physician?
No, Justin, that is absolutely not true. However, our podcast is funny and interesting and a great way to learn about the medical misdeeds of the past, as well as some current, not-so-legit healthcare fads.
So you're saying that by listening to our podcast, people will feel better?
Sure.
And isn't that the same reason that you go to the doctor?
Well, you could say that, but...
And our podcast is free?
Yes, it is free.
You heard it here first, folks. Sawbones, Meryl Tour of Misguided Medicine, right here on Maximum Fun, just as good as going to the doctor.
No. Still not just as good as going to the doctor, but pretty good.
It's up there.
Welcome back to Maximum Film. I'm your host, Iffy Wadiwe. In the studio with me are...
Alonzo Duralde.
Casey O'Brien.
Drea Clark.
And Marissa Flaxbart. Hi, it's me. Casey didn't come back and become the producer again. I'm still here.
When producers crash.
So, just as recently, I gave you guys a movie quiz inspired by the fact that we'd been talking about movies, one-word titles, where the word was a body part. Now, I've similarly been inspired to compile a lengthy list of movies like Priscilla, where they are about a person whose first name becomes the title. So that's the idea of this quiz. And there could actually be future iterations of the quiz because the list is very long and it's divided into sections about whether it's their first name or their last name, whether it is a real person or a fictional person. But what I have for you today is a quiz where all of the answers are movie titles that is the character's first name, and the character is real. A real person.
Okay.
These are all biopics. So what I'm going to do...
And just their first name.
Just their first name is the title. These
so
are
no
all...
no Bowfinger.
Priscilla. Oh, no.
Yeah. Bowfinger is a great example. Bowfinger is
real,
one word.
That's a last name.
No. So. Bowfinger is fictional last name. That's on the fictional last name list. Okay.
So these are real people.
First names.
But fictionalized versions of real lives.
Yes. There are no documentaries. These are all fictional movies. Biopics. I'll give you an example that is going to make this clear. Okay. The first movie stars Natalie Portman. It's from 2016.
Jackie.
See, you get it, Drea. You get it.
That was a practice round, though. That one didn't.
Damn it! Yeah. If that's my only one, I'm going to claim it.
How about a 2013 movie starring Naomi Watts?
Diana.
Diana. Ooh. Is the movie about Princess Diana.
I was like, Mulholland Drive. Got it.
Saw I'm that movie in the theater. A 2023 movie starring Gael Garcia Bernal.
Cassandra!
That's right.
This is all still practice round?
Okay.
Yeah.
2004, Jamie Foxx.
Ray
is the one, yes. 1979, Malcolm McDowell.
Clockwork.
The movie was directed by Tinto Brass.
Caligula.
Caligula is the answer. Okay.
Wow.
Iffy.
Okay.
Damn.
Okay, here's Iffy. Are you paying attention?
That was yours to lose.
I know. Damn it.
All right. 2019.
Judy.
Yes. Fuck yeah. Oh,
Iffy had that locked and loaded. Oh my God.
I'm so proud.
Oh my God.
Oh fuck. Oh, that was so funny.
All right. As long as we're talking friends of the show, 2011, Jack Black.
Bernie
is directed by Richard Linklater.
Yes.
Not a famous real person, but a real person.
But a real person, yes.
A real person.
Nonetheless, yeah.
2002, Salma Hayek.
Frida.
Oh, Frida.
Yeah. You guys
that
are good at this game.
That was a full family.
I shouldn't even read this one, but I'm going to. 2022, Austin Butler.
Elvis.
All right. This is the oldest movie I have on this list, from 1963, starring Elizabeth Taylor.
Cleopatra
is the movie.
Ooh, coming at you.
Okay, this one, I don't know, might be hard. This is a real person in the vein of Bernie, so that's a hint. From 2013, Judi Dench. The movie was directed by...
Go on.
Stephen Frears.
Oh, the...
Yeah.
There's a lot of hand-waving going on.
Philomena?
It is Philomena.
Okay. It's Penelope, but yes. Okay.
Yes. All right. The last one is from 2023, and it stars Helen Mirren.
Golda.
Golda is the movie. You guys are so good at this.
Yeah.
I love it. I don't know if the other rounds will be harder.
We once again mostly mean Alonzo, but the
no,
rest
no,
of
everybody
us
did
were
great.
Also here.
We're all
everyone
on the board.
Everyone did great. So I'll turn it over to you, Iffy. Thank you, everybody.
Solid quiz.
Yeah.
Good game. Yeah.
Thanks for having fun, guys.
Yeah, thank you for coming through. I did like that quiz because it had the movie that mattered. But now...
The movie
that Alonzo, I don't know why I should ask, but did you happen to watch any Christmas movies this week?
It is so funny that you bring that up because I did.
Okay, then I guess it's time for a Christmas movie minute, and if, you know, for Casey to kind of understand what's happening here.
Tell me.
So Alonzo is going to go through all the Christmas movies that he has seen in this minute, and
just
I'm gonna tell you, yeah, in the last week, and it's going to be in record time. And if you're already like, iffy, a minute's not enough, I'm going to say, why don't you check out Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas or I'll Be Home for Christmas Movies, the Deck the Hallmark podcast guys to your holiday TV obsession. Two things that Alonzo did in long form, but now it's time for short form. Are you ready?
Let's do it.
Okay.
Rip. So the Hallmark Week kicked off with my Christmas guide about a blind gentleman who falls in love with his seeing eye dog trainer. Sure, yes, but no. Didn't work. Not down. Really boring and barely Christmassy. Flipping for Christmas, about real estate, and it's one of those movies where the woman is wrong about everything because she's from the city and the small town guy is right about everything. Pass. No, thank you. Never Been Christ, intriguing idea with a love triangle, two women both in love with Tyler Hines, aka Long Dick Dirks, but they totally drop the ball and it doesn't make any sense by the end of it. The great one of the week, however, is The Santa Summit, which is a Hallmark movie. I would actually recommend to people who don't watch Hallmark movies, go check it out on Peacock. It's funny, it's charming, it's sweet, it's romantic, it's all the things you want out of these movies and so rarely ever get. High praise. If I see another Hallmark movie as good as The Santa Summit, then 2023 will be a kick-ass season, because really this is the apex. This is one of the best ones I've ever seen, and obviously as we get deeper into the season I'll be seeing a lot more of the course of the week, but this week there are just these four, so I have a little time to vamp here to the end of my minute.
I'm sold on that last one, but yeah, I want you to know I really wanted the first one's description to stop at a man falls in love with his seeing eye dog.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Not the handler, the dog. The dog, yeah. I would have been into, I'd be like, is Hallmark's that also out, a Hallmark's peacock? Not ready. Where am I checking that out?
There was some really good Christmas imagery in Priscilla, too. Some great Christmas shots.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, for sure.
I was like, ooh, this is making Alonzo horny. I can tell.
Casey, I'm sorry. Things have changed. No one but Iffy's allowed to use the word horny.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's okay. My word. Yeah.
Say what you will about Graceland. They knew how to hang a tree.
Yeah. Not a euphemism.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's time that we now go on to staff picks. So it could be any movie at all. Who wants to start?
I'll go. I have another film by a female director with French ties, and not in that she's married to a Frenchman, but that she's a French woman. Melanie Laurent, who is also an actor of note, has one of those beautiful Netflix films that's just released with zero fanfare, marketing, or notifications. It's recently out. It's called Wing Women. It's she, and I'm definitely going to need an assist from Alonzo here, Adele
Exarchopoulos.
That's the one. And they are longtime thieves and best friends who work for Isabel Adjani. Like,
what?
Come on. Let
How
me say
am I
all
not
these
hearing
names.
Of this movie until
Never
this very
heard of
moment?
It, and it, right. And it's so much. So it's sort of the whole like, oh, they're thieves. They got to pull off this thing. Like, how do we get on the run? Like, blah, blah. But it's also so crucially about women being friends and what that looks like. And just like the reality of like, if you are, you know, best friends with a getaway driver and you sort of one last job and then you hit the road, like, what does that look like under the umbrella of female friendship? Which I love. It's on Netflix. It's called Wing Women. You've never heard of it anywhere, because why in the world would they promote their films?
Good heaven. We did an entire episode about Melanie Laurent's last promoted streaming film, The Mad Women's Ball, which I assume is still a Prime Video. So go figure. So I was this close to going with The Naked Gun in honor of Priscilla Presley, but I decided instead that I would give a shout out to a Sofia Coppola movie that I love that I think a lot of people missed because it came out during the COVID lockdown. And it is now on Apple TV Plus. It's called On the Rocks, and it stars Rashida Jones as a non-ensconced woman in a Sofia Coppola movie. She has the run of New York City. It's very exciting. She does, however, also have a marriage that is in trouble. She's married to Marlon Wayans. She thinks maybe he's cheating, but she can't tell. Her dad, who knows a thing or two about cheating, played by Bill Murray, decides that they're both going to be all Detective Pikachu about this and follow him around and figure out what's really happening. And it's just really charming and funny. And Rashida Jones has never been better. And both she and Sofia Coppola know from Larger Than Life Dads. So Bill Murray has a very plum role for him and taps into his on-screen persona in a really great way. As much as I talk about the Sofia Coppola movie and the kind of chucks to do, this one does color outside the line some, and it's also
literally exciting. A woman of color.
There you go.
Completely forgot. I backed that up, both in that it was completely forgotten about by me, and it's incredibly charming.
Yeah,
nice, Check nice, Alonzo.
Yeah,
Casey.
Casey God, I hope you say Naked Gun.
I am not going to say Naked Gun. But, you know, watching this movie, being trapped in a house, it reminded me of a movie I watched this year. And I know it's illegal to recommend a horror movie, but I'm going to recommend Skinner Inc. Anybody, you guys talk about that movie?
No.
We haven't.
It is a great movie. The premise is two little kids wake up in their house and their dad is gone and all the windows and doors on the house have disappeared. It's very moody. It was made for like $15,000 and it is really effective. It's really scary. It's very slow. It is so slow. I can't prepare you enough how slow it is, but I thought it was really effective and really mesmerizing. So go check out Skinamarink, or as we called it in our house, Skinkadink, for no reason. But
Skinkadink.
I've heard great things. Iffy and I will pass.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is scary. It is very scary.
I heard
scary.
It is very, very skinny. Yes.
It's a great, it's one of Canada's finest offerings from last year.
Yeah. Well, speaking of Canada's finest offerings, I went to pluck an actress out of Priscilla, who, you know, I wonder if Alonzo might have seen, because it's Georgia Cadence, who may be known for Sex Life and Letterkenny, but was also in my staff pick, A Christmas Letter, a TV movie that is now available on Tubi by David Lipper. Follow that train. But that one I did specifically for Alonzo because we are now in the Christmas movie season. But nice.
You have stumped the band. I have no idea what the Christmas Letter is. But hey, if she was on Letterkenny, pretty much if you were ever on Letterkenny, Degrassi, or like, you know, The Flash, I think. Like pretty much any show, if your show shot in Vancouver, someday the Christmas people will be banging on your door.
Yeah. They'll come a knocking.
Pitter patter.
All right.
Oh my God. Drea, by the way, sorry, do you know that the upcoming season of Letterkenny is the last one?
I've been wearing all black ever since.
Oh. Can't even wrap my head around it.
Oh, so that's why you're
shroud.
Well, no, I meant your face mask. You had it at half mast outside your home.
Exactly.
Yes. Well, thanks to Casey O'Brien. You have something you want to tell listeners about, right?
Yes, I do. So I have a crowdfunding campaign for a feature film that I'm trying to make. It's called 14 Stories in a Bathroom. Talk about being caught in a small place. 14 stories. It's an anthology film. All vignettes, all the scenes take place in various bathrooms. The crowdfunding campaign is up right now. It's really hard to make feature films, if you guys didn't know, especially if you aren't a connected. I mean, this is what the Nippo babies don't have to deal with, you know, like having to raise money like this. And
you did not use that phrase in an episode about a Sofia Coppola.
I guess that's true. Trying to raise money for that. People on this very podcast have been very kind in helping out with the crowdfunding campaign. Iffy has read an early script. And wait, can I say this that you're going
to? Yeah. I was going to pressure you to say it. So go for it.
Also, Iffy has said he would be in it. And he also makes an appearance in the promotional video on the crowdfunding website where we're raising money is on a site called WeFunder. Drea has been very supportive. She watched a cut of a short film, which is one of the vignettes that will go in the anthology film.
And which stars a friend of the podcast.
Luce Tomlin-Brenner is the lead of that. Yes. Nice. So we're working on that. And then Alonzo, your time is going to come.
And I told Casey to go fuck himself.
Yes. That's right. Yeah. Well, he'll eventually throw his journalistic standards aside and give me a rave review for this film, even if it sucks. But if you want to go to wefunder.com/14.stories.in.a.bathroom, you can give to the film. And if you want to follow me on Instagram, Casey Lee O'Brien is my handle, and I've been posting updates this month. We're in the middle of a 30-day campaign, so we're trying to raise all the money by December 1st. So if you want to support independent film,
Minnesota made independent film.
If you want to help produce a cool movie, I would love that.
Help out our sweet child bride, Casey O'Brien. Get in there.
Please, he needs it. He needs it, and he needs you.
Thank you. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mazel tov.
The streets say I am in fact attached. So you get two for one.
He's attached. Absolutely. Yeah.
Go ahead. Let the suits know.
If he also read the script and gave me notes on it too. So he's done a lot of work. He's helped me out a lot with this already, so I'm very appreciative of him. And
very appreciative of you. All right. Thank you.
Also, I host a art house podcast called Fart House, and we talk about artsy fartsy films. So if you want to check that out, Fart House. We have great SEO. That's the only Fart House out there. So check that out as well.
Oh. Imagine people weren't stepping all over themselves to get that.
The only Fart House out there. He's got a tattoo that says that.
You know who else I'm appreciative of, Casey?
Tell me.
Dre and Alonzo, thank you for another wonderful show.
Well played.
Always good to sit in this seat, stare at y'all over Zoom, and who knows, maybe one day we'll sweat in that small box again. If you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, send us an email at maximumfilm@maximumfun.org or find us on any of our social media channels, which are all linked in the show notes. Next week, we're going to be talking about the Marvels, and our producer is the wonderful Marissa Flaxbart, probably my favorite producer I've ever had for this pod. Knocked it out the park, coming out. Being top notch.
Shows you how
truly
it's done.
Blessed. And our senior producer is also wonderful, Laura Swisher. This is a production of Maximum Fun. Bye bye.
Oh my God.
Maximum Fun,
a worker-owned network
of artist-owned shows,
supported
directly
by you.